nice warm bed. You just remember what your old past said. Boy, you got a friend in me. Yeah, you got a friend in me. You got.
And good afternoon, and welcome to the Community Living Show. And we're live here at CFRO 100.5 FM, Vancouver's Co-op Radio. I'm here today kind of flying solo. Kelly is off doing Access TV. I guess he's going to have a really special guest, but I give you a hint, it's one of our favorite animators. I'm pretty sure of it. So I'm here by myself, and we're going to talk today about chronic illness. We kind of started this yesterday when we had a couple clips about having fibromyalgia. And we also had Cheryl Young on yesterday on our other show from the Fibromyalgia Wellspring. And as you know, this year, this May, I believe is May 24th, and I better get that date straight because I'm going to be shooting it as a documentary. Oops. They're going to be doing a walk from Langley to Banff for awareness for hidden illnesses, chronic conditions, and especially fibromyalgia. So, I have a couple clips that I want to play today about living with and getting diagnosed with a chronic illness. So if you bear with me a second here, and I will start to play the first clip.
Now I've made about four of these videos, and they keep crashing, so I hope this uploads. I have a very old computer that has been damaged, and sometimes things don't work very well, so we'll cross our fingers. But I wanted to start off talking about the frustrations, what goes into getting a diagnosis, what to do after you get a diagnosis, and sort of what I went through getting diagnosed with fibromyalgia. Now, when you live with a chronic illness, a chronic disease, and you don't have a diagnosis yet, it is really frustrating and it gets really lonely and really depressing. There are really a lot of reasons for this. One, we aren't being listened to, or if we are being listened to, we're really just being dismissed. And then on top of that, we have doctors telling us that they think it's all in our head, which basically just makes us feel crazy and makes us feel more depressed and more alone. And then if we do have a doctor that listens to us, they'll just say, well, we have no idea. We don't know what's going on with you, which is so scary because then we don't feel like there's any way we can control what's going on with ourselves. If we at least have a diagnosis, we know, okay, well, where do we go from here? What medicine should I be on? What treatments should I be on? What sort of diet should I be on? Is there any sort of physical therapy I can do? Are there any new alternative treatments coming up that I can qualify for? Getting a diagnosis is really helpful because it's a way to understand what's going on with your body, and then you can sort of live accordingly. You can start planning your life out, start trying to get healthy, build a health plan, build a remission plan, and you can sort of have an idea of what's going to be going on for at least a little while in your body. But until you get that diagnosis, it's really frustrating. I got sick in 2009, but I didn't get my diagnosis of fibromyalgia until 2010. So I lived about a year without a diagnosis, and that was probably the worst year of my life. I went to many, many different doctors, and I went to a lot of different types of specialists. And this is the thing when you live with a mystery diagnosis or chronic illness. You try every different type of specialist you can, and you really start to think outside the box because you have to find someone who will listen to you. And if one specialist doesn't listen to you, you're forced to move on to the other one. So until I got my diagnosis with fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue syndrome, I saw psychiatrists, I saw thyroid doctors, I saw an ear, nose, and throat doctor because my gland was swollen outside like a golf ball size, so they thought I had cancer. I saw rheumatologists, I saw homeopaths, natural doctors who thought they could cure me with herbs and things like that, which I'm totally all for natural medicine, but I think you kind of need to have at least a diagnosis or understanding of what's going on with your body before you start something down that path, because then you kind of know where to go from there. But I also saw acupuncturists, I saw mental health therapists, I saw immunologists, I got tested for leukemia, I got tested for lymphoma, all kinds of different cancers, I got tested for, I don't even know what else I got tested for, I was always doing different blood tests. I had to go once a week for a blood test, just to make sure things were going okay, and to just keep testing to see if they could find anything. And throughout this, I just kept hearing the same thing, is we don't know what's wrong with you, or because we don't know what's wrong with you, there's something in your head. It's all in your head, and you're just making it up for attention or because you're depressed. Now, if anybody ever tells you this, they are so full of crap, because one, it's not in your head, and you know that, and two, they are being probably one of the worst doctors to tell you that, because it's their job to help you, and if they can't help you, they have to refer you somewhere else that they think might help you. Also, they're all obviously being incredibly uncaring and unkind, which is almost unethical to me if you ask, especially in the medical field. They have to listen to you, and they have to try and understand what's going on with you in order to help you get diagnosed. And if anybody ever treats you like that, it's time to find someone else and go to a new specialist. Now, in order to get diagnoses and to travel around to these new specialists and to keep thinking outside of the box and trying something new to just see if you can get someone to listen to you, I have a couple of tips that sort of helped me along the way. Now, luckily, I was able to have my mom take me to doctors and things like that. I was unable to walk, so when I went to the Cleveland Clinic, it was great because they had wheelchairs and a fabulous staff, and they're very hands-on, and it's like a city within a city. It's a great facility, so when I went there, I felt very taken care of. If I had to go to a different doctor, you know, my mom would sort of help me find different specialists, or she would drive me there because I couldn't drive, and so luckily I was able to do that. I do hope that you guys are all able to have someone in your life who will be able to take you to doctor's appointments, because I know how exhausting that can be, driving and just getting out of the house. So I do wish you the best of luck in hoping that you have someone there who can at least take you places. I had my grandparents take me to doctor's appointments when I wasn't living with my parents anymore. They would take me to the Cleveland Clinic a couple times. So luckily I did have those people there. But when you do go to these doctor's appointments, there's a couple things that you should have with you. One is a list of questions, because you have to be your own advocate. When you're living with a chronic illness or chronic disease, the unfortunate thing is that all too often, like I said, they don't know what's going on with you and they're not going to listen to you. So in order to get your point across, you have to be very straightforward and you have to be really upfront. And you have to fight to be heard. And it sucks. Trust me, I know. It sucks. And it's tiring. It's overwhelming. Makes you feel awful. Makes you feel like you are crazy, you just feel so lonely, but guess what? It's just sort of what we're stuck with. And it's not our fault, it's just the system, because there are so many diseases out there that doctors don't know about. And until they do that one special test, or that one random test, or they really listen to you and look closely, and maybe a new drug is released, until we find that doctor that will really listen to us, we have to fight for it. And so I definitely honor you for going out there and searching for someone to listen to you. I went through that struggle, and it really sucks. And I just want to let you know, it's not you, it's the doctors, and it's the system. Because a lot of times, they just don't know. So when you do go to the doctor, have a list of questions. Because a lot of times, you want to know what they are thinking, or, you know their credentials. You know, ask them what they are testing for. Ask them what this means on your chart. A lot of times I would ask them to print off my blood tests so I could have a copy. Because I wanted to know, well, what does this say and what does that say? I wanted to track my blood cells. I wanted to see what my lymphocytes were at and, you know, see what my proteins were at or things like that. So ask them for copies of the charts that you do, because you are their patient, so you have a right to see. Also, I would track my symptoms a lot of the times, because dealing with brain fog or cognitive dysfunction, which is really comes with fibromyalgia chronic fatigue syndrome, I would be so out of it, either because of the brain fog or because I was on painkillers, that I would forget some major things that happened in my day. Or things that seem so obvious to me, like I can't walk, I'm in a wheelchair because I have no energy and no muscle function, no strength, didn't seem as obvious to them as a symptom. So a lot of times I would forget the most obvious things to write down, and I'd go home and I'd think, oh crap, I should have said this or I should have said that. And a lot of times if you track your symptoms, either daily or weekly, whatever is easier for you, I understand it's hard to write down everything every day just because we're exhausted and we're tired and we're in pain. Maybe try and do it every week. If you do that, then they can kind of see how your body's progressing and maybe what triggers a flare, maybe what is going on in your environment or your week that's making you feel a certain way. And it's always great to have a list of symptoms so that they know what's going on, and then they can maybe look at it and say, oh, well, this symptom, these kind of go with this disease, or maybe we should test you with this. Luckily, fibromyalgia is getting a little bit more attention. Unfortunately, a lot of people still think it is a fake disease. It doesn't really exist, and people are just using it as an excuse to say that they have something wrong with them, or an excuse to get handicapped parking sticker, which is complete crap, because if they actually knew what fibromyalgia was like, they would never say that, ever. But this is just insensitivity and another example of what's kind of going wrong in the medical world. But I got diagnosed right when people were starting to sort of take a look at fibromyalgia. This is how I got diagnosed. Usually with fibromyalgia, you'll see a doctor, they'll look at your symptoms and they'll say, huh, well, this kind of sounds like this disease that we've been hearing about and looking at, and there's been more awareness about it. So when I went to two appointments at the Cleveland Clinic. One was for an infectious disease appointment to do blood tests, and the next follow-up was with infectious disease and an immunologist. And trust me, I know how long it takes to get appointments. That's also something that's really frustrating with getting a diagnosis. I know it took me, I would have to wait 2 to 3 months in between my appointments at the Cleveland Clinic to get in, and I just remember laying there thinking, okay, well, what if I die in between these 2 months where I'm waiting to get help from someone? Am I just supposed to sit here and wait? And we have to, because there's nothing else we can do, and it freaking sucks. I'm sorry, I don't usually get so impassioned during my videos, but I know how much it sucks, and unfortunately, we just have to wait. And so I finally went back for a third time. They looked at all my blood tests and they transferred me to the rheumatology department. And these handle things like arthritis, which a lot of times fibromyalgia is sort of tucked under and it's sort of part of that. And so when I went to this doctor, he sort of had me fill out, I remember I filled out this paper that was like a, you'd answer questions like on a scale from 1 to 10, how often do you feel this way, or how often do you feel that, do you feel depressed, how often are you in pain, how often do you get outside, and it was just sort of a survey, and so we went through something like that, and then we had to do the trigger point test. I don't like the trigger point test, I think it's a bunch of crap, because basically what they do is there's a certain amount of trigger points, or tender points, on your body that if they touch, someone touches you in that tender point, then it hurts, and if it hurts, you have fibromyalgia. Well, in order to get a diagnosis, you have to have a percentage, like so many percent of the trigger points, tender points, have to be tender to get diagnosed. So say there's like 12, you would have to have maybe like 9 or 10 that hurt when they get touched to get diagnosed with fibromyalgia. But what if you only have like 3? Well, then you don't get diagnosed, but you could still have fibromyalgia. So I think it's a bunch of baloney. But the tender points are your, like on your shoulders and your neck, in between your shoulder blades, your lower back, your hips, your elbows, your wrists, like your knees, basically up and throughout the body, mainly through the joints and the back. And so I remember going through doing the tender point test thinking, well, my whole body hurts. There's no one point that hurts. Everything you're touching is sore and screaming in pain, and you touching it isn't making it hurt any worse because it already hurts as much as it could hurt. So honestly, I remember when I went through my trigger point test just saying, every single thing on my body hurts. there's nothing that doesn't hurt, so anywhere you touch, it's not going to matter. And finally, he was just kind of like, well, we'll just diagnose you with fibromyalgia then.
Hot squats Noyup, Monica Queens Nah. Hello, my name is Monica. We're from Norgate Community School.
Hot squall tenoyap, Norman Queens Nah. Tina chitla homolchistin squalauto.
Chopwa tequayaan, ta, Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. Online at www.cooperadio.org.
Hi guys, Friday again. Woo. This week I'm going to be discussing my experience on getting a diagnosis for fibromyalgia, because I've seen it pop up on social pages, a lot of like people that are just starting out, and I just feel it would be a helpful little video to do. Before I actually start this week's video, I made a promise that I would mention this. There is a petition running at the moment through Fibro Partners, and what they are doing is they are trying to raise awareness and get more support and a bit more medical research being done. Now, they actually need about 100,000 signatures minimum. That's so that it can go to government. If it's any less than that, they won't look at it. It literally takes a minute to do, and I will leave the link in the description box below for you, so it's even quicker to do. All you have to do is put your name, your email address, and where in the world you're from. That's the other thing. It's not just a UK petition, it is worldwide. So get on it, do it, and let's get it noticed a bit more, because let's face it, it's just not at the moment. Take a minute out of your day to do it, and I would love you forever. On to my video. I'm going to start off by saying, if you are just starting out, be patient, because you're gonna have to be. There is no other choice but to be patient. I was very active, I had a full-time job, I was also very active in my social life. I was always doing something. It started in November 2013, when I nearly ruptured my Achilles tendon in my foot, and I was given 2 weeks off to rest it because I basically wasn't supposed to put any pressure on it at all. During those 2 weeks, I found my body started behaving very, very oddly. I was getting joints swell up from nowhere, I was getting shooting pains in my body, I couldn't get warm at all, I was having IBS, everything. My body just went insane out of nowhere. And I first started realising something was really quite wrong when my sick notes from the doctor started going from 2 weeks, then it would get increased to a month, and then it was increased to 12 weeks, and it was just getting longer and longer before they were even saying I could go back to work. And I was in and out of appointments all the time. I felt like I was just stuck in a bit of a loop. For about 9 months, because I'd be going to the doctors, then I'd have to go in and see the occupational health at work, and it was back to the doctors. It was just a constant loop of seeing those people. I just felt like that was what my life had become, and I was no nearer to knowing what was wrong with me, and I felt very much like a guinea pig the whole way through. Until the day of my diagnosis, I felt like a guinea pig, because I was getting a lot of blood tests done on and off, and I'd have to be in like 3 times a week for about 2 months, and then they'd lay off for a bit, and then they'd want me back in again just to check to see if anything had changed. And if you don't like needles, be prepared, because you're going to be going in for a lot of blood tests. That's definitely something you will be having done, so just prepare yourself for that and just don't worry about it too much. Once it reached nearly a year, I'd say after about 10 months, I just felt very much like I was just being given painkillers and told to rest, and nothing was getting any better. I was worse than I was before, and there was no pattern to what was happening with me. I was left to guess all the time and try and spot things myself. And I just couldn't see anything to give me or the doctors a clue. I didn't know at all, and neither did they. I only got in with the neurologist. That was the first official test I had done. The first test that they did on me was a head, neck and spinal MRI. Now, if you don't like small spaces, you're really not going to enjoy this, because I personally don't like small tight spaces. And I was in there for a good 45 minutes having my scan done, and it's really loud. Like, people tell you it's loud, but until you are in that machine, you can't guess what it's going to sound like. But it really was an experience, and I very nearly pressed the clicker to take me out and start again, but I just decided to stick with it and go through it and get it over and done with. And I'm glad I did it that way, because I don't think I'd have been able to go back in again if I'd have come out of it. I had to wait for the results from that, and nothing came from that. So it was on to the next test with the neurologist. The second test that I had done was an ECG. And what they actually do in an ECG is they put little needles in you. They're not too big. And I clearly don't have issues with needles. It's not so much that part that's the problem. What they actually do is they send small electrical currents through your body, and they just check how well your body reacts to that. So if they don't react until a lot of force is put into it, they can realise that there's problems with your nerve connections. Now, again, nothing came of this at all. It wasn't their problem. There was one or two little things highlighted, but it wasn't the cause of what was going on with my body. It was then back to the doctors, my new best friend. I felt like she was. And yeah, I was sort of left wondering again, is it in my head? Am I imagining all this? Am I just being a bit of a wimp? And actually, it's not that bad. But no, my doctor then agreed that something really wasn't right with me, and it just meant that that wasn't the person I had to see, and we basically were just going to keep going until we found someone that knew what was going on. Now, like I say, it took just over a year to get diagnosed, so I believe it was in January of 2014 that I then got put through to the rheumatologist specialist. Now, this woman was absolutely fantastic, and the appointment there had a bit of a waiting list to get in. So you will find that, yes, you will get in for these tests, but you're told to wait 3-4 weeks. Like, they have, certainly in the UK, they have a 12-week waiting system. They're not supposed to let you wait any longer than that. But a lot of the time, you are literally right up until the deadline point. I got in with the rheumatologist, and both me and my other half went to go and see her. And the examination there basically consisted of a physical test, so she could check flexibility, any particular swelling or problems. She just needed to have a bit of a hands-on look at your body and see what's going on. But the other part of the diagnosis is that you actually sit and talk about symptoms you've been having in terms of physical and mental as well, because there is definitely an aspect of mental problems in there with fibromyalgia, in terms of anxiety, depression. It seems a very common theme that if you have this, it kind of ties along with it, or joining the party. She actually spoke to both me and my other half when it came to the emotional side of things, because I think they know they're going to get a much more honest answer from someone that's with you than from you. Because if I'd have been asked, was I anxious, was I stressed, was I depressed? I didn't know this lady, and it's very difficult to open up to people you don't know. So a lot of those questions were actually asked to my other half, in terms of changes that they'd seen in me, because I'd become quite ratty. I found my patience level had really sunk down, and I wasn't enjoying the things I used to enjoy all the time, and my depression had really started kicking off, and I was getting anxious over the stupidest of things, like if I had to go somewhere, if I had to go somewhere new. That really stressed me out, yet that never used to be a problem. After about 45 minutes of talking with the specialist, she finally told me that I was suffering with fibromyalgia, thrombosis, and also joint hypermobility. So I have a nice little pick and mix of problems to deal with, which is great fun. When I got told that, it was like a massive weight had been lifted off my shoulders, because I then realised that actually I am not imagining this pain and these symptoms. There really is something wrong with me. But on the other hand, I also suddenly became quite sad and scared, because I was told that fibromyalgia is incurable and it's just going to be a case of learning to deal with what is happening to my body. So that was quite a frightening thing to hear. Generally, I would say it was more of a relief that actually there was something wrong with me that had been proven. I think if I could give any advice to someone that's just starting the process, I'd have two things mainly to say. First of all, like I said at the start, patience is definitely a virtue, because don't expect to be in within 2 days to your next appointment. You're looking at least a minimum of 3 weeks wait, even for blood tests. So you're going to be going to a lot of places and they're not necessarily going to tell you things. So you'll have these tests done and you have to wait for a letter to come in the post to tell you that actually it's not their problem. So yeah, patience is really, really going to be needed. The second bit of advice that I would give is don't push people around you away, because you're going to feel alone, you're going to feel misunderstood, and at the same time the people around you don't understand and they are just as scared as you are. So don't push them away and not tell them things, because there were certain times during appointments that I would have things to say but my brain would just have thrown it out and I couldn't actually remember what it was I wanted to get across. But it was at those points that my other half, she'd step in and say, oh, well, you'd also said this, that and the other. And if I hadn't have been keeping her involved, there was no way that that would have come across. And actually, it could be really quite key to the diagnosis. So not only that, you don't make yourself any more lonely than you feel, because there's nothing worse than feeling ill and feeling alone as well. That's pretty much everything for that. Just want to quickly remind you again about the petition. If you don't mind just taking a minute to do it, I would appreciate it so much. Even if you don't have it, if you know someone with it, sign it and just let's get some help going on, because there's not enough happening. I hope you actually enjoyed this video. I know it was a little bit...
Well, you heard two clips where... Two young ladies are trying to get diagnosed, and the frustration they go through with the doctors telling them it's all in their head and you're crazy or something like that. And you can see where it's actually been a relief that they did actually get a diagnosis. So anyway, I'm going to put these two clips up on YouTube, from YouTube up on our Facebook page later on. And I'm going to leave you now with a song from our friend Karina Keeley. Okay, Love is a Movement.
Changes all the time in terms of the specific issue that I went up about. But the heart of it is the same, is that it's, I have a lot of faith in us. You're not standing up here doesn't mean you can't sing along. Mm-hmm.
ones we have.